For Discovery News, I am not Will Johnson. Will Johnson is sitting poolside somewhere down, I believe, in Florida this week.
In beach mode. He has a lot of...
He's always in a beach
mode. He has a lot of vacation time, that guy.
I know.
Yeah.
I want to be in a beach mode more.
He's been here a while. It's built up over the years. I think he has maybe 4 or 5 months vacation per year.
I don't know where that comes from. Sorry I missed a show last week, everybody.
Yeah.
I was not in a beach mode. I was in work mode.
Yeah.
So, but I did listen to the show, and I must say, did you listen to it, Jorge?
Mm-hmm.
The awesomeness that Will Johnson put at the very end of the show. He added the ukulele back in.
Oh, yeah, I did.
I've got some big plans for that.
I didn't get to the end. Wow.
That thing is going to take on a new life, everybody. I've got some big plans.
Oh, really?
Now I want to add some explosions to it.
I could see like a remastering.
Yeah. I think we're going to go back into the studio on that one.
Maybe you do like a multi-track.
Something.
You know, because it's kind of in lo-fi. I think you need to really bring it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of like a wall of sound thing.
So because we are like a headless ant right now without Will Johnson.
Just, that would just be a dead ant.
Yeah.
Maybe
but
like
we're
a
still
headless
moving. We're still
like
twitching though.
Yeah.
We're not totally dead. Like you have that reflex.
I'm thinking more like a daddy long legs when you pull some of the legs off.
All right.
You know?
So because we're like a headless daddy long legs, we actually are totally unprepared and don't have any of the voting information or anything. But we do have two stories for everybody.
Yeah, although last week it was just me versus me. So, I mean,
should still get a point for that. Whichever one of you wins should get a point. So this week, we are going to vote. I guess we'll get that poll up probably on Monday.
Yeah.
So please do vote on this week's stories. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, I suggest listening to last week's podcast or the one before that, and you can get all the information about the show. All right. So let's just jump right into it, Jorge.
Sounds good.
All right. So I'll go first.
Yeah, you get,
Okay. So my story this week is not, I'm doing a little bit of a departure, but this is part of our deeper dive experience with the new format of the show.
Agreed.
One show each. The story that I am going to do is based on a YouTube viral video that perhaps people have seen. It's this girl texting. She falls into a fountain. I spoke with Professor Dan Simons from the University of Illinois, a professor in the Department of Psychology, about was there anything else going on? I mean, why
did this happen?
Yeah. And so here's a question, Jorge. Do you feel like you can multitask?
I feel like I can, but I'm pretty sure I can't. But I feel like there's certain elements. But see, and also I wonder what defines multitasking. Like I can drink a cup of coffee and walk at the same time. Obviously, that's using probably two different parts of my brain, but when I try to do things that require like maybe the same thing, but I still think I can. I mean, you know, everyone thinks they can. We all do it.
I was convinced that I am a good multitasker until I had a conversation last week with Professor Simon. So to just get right to it, this is my story this week is on your ability or lack thereof to actually multitask. So on the line, we have, to help us explain this, Professor Dan Simons. He is a professor in the Department of Psychology at the University of Illinois. Professor Simons, how are you today?
I'm good.
So the one thing that there's this video out there of this girl who is texting, and she's not looking where she's going, and she falls into the pool of water.
Like a fountain, right?
Right, the fountain of water. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure listeners have seen this video. If you haven't, do a search for girl texting falls in a fountain on YouTube. Anyway, so I talked to Professor Simons about that, and it was actually a really interesting conversation about what comes down to our inability as humans to actually multitask. So, Professor Simons, if you could expand on that for us.
Sure. So there are two kind of remarkable aspects about multitasking. The first is that we really can't do it. And the second is that we think that we can. So people think that they can text and walk at the same time. In reality, we can really only focus attention on one thing at a time. So a girl can walk into a fountain while texting because she's literally not aware of her surroundings when she's focusing her attention on the phone. The same is true, of course, when you're driving and talking on the cell phone. The act of talking uses up some of the same pool of resources that driving does. And the result is that your driving is severely impaired. But again, we don't notice the extent to which we're distracted. We don't realize that those two things are using up the same abilities, same skills, same cognitive functions.
So, Dan, what you're saying is that we're not as awesome as we think we are.
Yeah, I think that's generally true. People tend to be overconfident in their own abilities, and that's especially true when we're reasoning about our own minds. So we tend to think that we see more than we actually do, that we remember more than we actually do, that our memories, when we recall something vividly, must be right. We tend to think we're more knowledgeable about our environment than we actually are. So if you ask people, do you know how a toilet works? Most people say, yeah, I kind of know how a toilet works. You can ask people a simple diagnostic question, like, why does the water leave the tank? Or what causes the bowl to fill up? And you realize almost immediately that you were overconfident in your knowledge. You really knew a lot less than you think you did. What you knew was not how a toilet works, but how to work a toilet.
What I think is so interesting about this is that you, like, our brain doesn't know what it doesn't know. Like, I am convinced that I could drive while texting. I'm pretty sure I'm good at that. But after talking to you last week, it made me rethink that, and I realized, like, not at all. Like, it's amazing how little I'm actually able to do two things at once like that that require my full attention.
Yeah, I mean, texting while driving, talking on a phone while driving, is distracting roughly to the same degree that driving under the influence of alcohol is.
Yeah.
Texting is about an order of magnitude worse. So when you're texting, you feel like you can do both because you're just looking down for a second or so. And you know, you can look at your radio dial for a second and still, for the most part, unless something really unusual happens right at that instant, you're probably okay. When you're looking away at your radio dial, you know that you have to look back up at the road. But when you're texting, you kind of get lost in time. You're focusing on sending that message and kind of completing it. And people will actually look away for 5, 10, 15 seconds while they're going down the road, and they're no longer going down the road by that point.
And so the reason that doesn't work is because your brain is saying, hey, you can do this, and your brain doesn't realize that it actually can't, so your brain can't tell you not to do it.
That's right. I mean, to a large extent, the reason we continue to do things like drive and talk on the phone or text while you're driving is that you rarely get the evidence that you're doing something wrong. Right? So most of the time, you're not going to crash. And every time you successfully drive home while texting, it reinforces your belief that you can do it. And fortunately, accidents are rare. But what texting while driving or talking on a phone while driving does is makes you really unlikely to notice something unexpected happen right in front of you.
So the you know, this example with the girl walking, obviously, because you're not moving at, you know, she's not walking at 60 miles per hour down a highway, you know, the end result is more comical than horrifying, you know.
Yeah, she didn't die, she got wet.
But it's the same concept of, you know, like, even if I'm, you know, texting, I'm walking down the hall, two people will bump into each other, right? You know, it's that same idea. So here's what, you know, we live in a society where you are not even just encouraged to multitask, you're almost expected to at this point, right? I mean, we have all these devices. Like, if you don't multitask, like, you're not maximizing your time.
There's entire industries built on the ability to multitask.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are two things that play into the issue of what we have to do. So when we're multitasking, most people think multitasking means doing two things at the same time, and that is what it actually means. The problem is it's really hard to intuit, to think about when you're actually using the same resources at the same time. So everybody has 10 projects they're working on at the same time, and they shift back and forth between them. Or you might be checking your email, and then you're talking on the phone, and then you're working on a paper. All of those sorts of things, you're shifting back and forth between them. You're not actually doing them at the same time. Right? And the problem comes when we have to do something simultaneously that uses up the same resources. It's a lot like trying to whistle and chew gum and talk at the same time.
Right.
If they use your mouth in different ways, you can't do them at once. But you could do them all sequentially and shift back and forth between them and think of that as multitasking. So we confuse shifting back and forth with true multitasking, which is something that we really can't do. And I think that's one of the reasons why talking on a phone and driving is so dangerous, is that people don't think of those two things as using the same skills and same resources and same abilities, but they do.
And you're saying that even if we put the phone information, like were to somehow project it on the windshield, that wouldn't make it any better.
It probably wouldn't. So there's a remarkable study from the late 1980s by a man named Richard Haynes, and he was out at NASA Ames doing research on pilots and head-up displays. So taking exactly that idea, taking your instruments and your dials, putting them on your windshield so you don't have to look away from where you're going in order to see it. And they're now texting applications that use your camera's phone to show the world behind your phone on the camera as you're texting. And the idea is that, hey, if all the information is right there and you're looking at it, that guarantees that you'll see it. But what Haynes found was that when he took these commercial airline pilots in a flight simulator, gave them a head-up display and had them fly around and come in for landings, on one of the landings, he unexpectedly put a jet sitting on the runway where they were landing, and a couple of them landed right through it and never saw it at all.
Oh, man.
Most of them were too slow to respond, to pull up.
How about things like, how about when you're something like, you mentioned flying. What about a pilot who, I imagine, I've never flown a plane, but there's tons of gears and things you're looking at different, you know, your altitude level, and I know, I'm just talking, I don't know anything. But that seems to me like that is multitasking in a way, but they can do it. Or is that maybe just a focused task?
Maybe that's why they have a co-pilot.
Yeah.
It's actually a tremendous problem for pilots, right? If you have too many dials and instruments, how do you grab a pilot's attention without taking it away from the other things that they have to be focusing on?
Yeah.
What they can't do is take in everything at once.
Right.
What they can do is shift attention very efficiently to the things that really matter at that moment. So, you know, jet pilots are experienced at knowing what matters and what doesn't and where they should be looking to get the information they need. But nobody really can focus on multiple things at once really well. Anytime you're truly multitasking and doing two things at once that compete for resources, you do both of them worse.
Yeah,
so in fact,
that's true.
A study that came out of the University of Illinois a couple years ago, or actually about a year ago, by Ensar Becik, found that talking on a phone while driving not only impairs your driving, it also impairs your talking. Your conversation is worse as well, because both of them rely on the same skills and abilities and resources.
Can I just say that I don't actually text while driving? I don't want people to think that I actually do that.
Can I also say for the record, I do not know how a toilet works. I actually thought that the other day as I was fixing a knob on our toilet, was thinking, I can't believe I don't know how a toilet works.
Yeah. I mean, another example of that sort of illusion of knowledge. Rebecca Lawson, another colleague of mine, had a very simple test where she asked people, you know, do you know how to ride a bicycle? And if so, most people do. Have you ridden one lately? How regularly do you ride them? Do you feel like you know what a bicycle looks like? Right? And then ask people to just draw the major parts of a bicycle. And people make really fundamental mistakes. Like, for example, having the chain connect both tires, both wheels. And if you did that, if you think about it for a minute, you'll realize you could never turn.
Right.
But it's a remarkably common error. When I do that as a classroom demonstration, about half the people draw the chain connecting both wheels.
That's funny.
Even though these are people who've ridden the bike every day, you know, every day since they were five, it's not something that automatically registers. You feel like you know it, and if you looked at a bike, you could certainly figure it out. But it's not in your head in the same way that you think it is.
So basically, the bottom line is that we need to meet our brains where our brains are at, which is that they are only that we are only able to do one thing really well at one time, and that we can't split those resources, and that we just need to accept that and be comfortable with the fact
I think this has to do with computers. I think we're trying to compete with computers and we're thinking, you know, oh, computers can do three things at one time, so can we. We're just not going to win that battle.
Well, it's a real temptation because we have access to all of these things that we could be doing at the same time. And the real problem isn't just that we can't do it. It's that we think we can. So, and it's really hard to overcome that intuition because anytime you're doing multiple things at once, by definition, you're distracted. So you're less likely to notice that you're distracted.
I am hereby pledging to accept my brain as it is.
Well, you'd be way ahead of the rest of the human race if you can do that.
Yeah, we'll see how long it lasts. Well, and so you are also...
He's actually texting while he's talking.
Yeah, I've been sending emails and iChatting and all kinds of things. I just built a Facebook page to my brain. So you're also the co-author of a book, The Invisible Gorilla.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually saw that if anybody... I don't know. Maybe you should explain what that is real quick, because it's a fascinating little... It's not even an illusion, is it? It's just a highlight of how we don't see things that are right in front of us. So.
Yeah. So the book, The Invisible Gorilla, is about this general gap we have between what we see and remember and think we remember and think we know and what we actually see and remember and know. So it's pointing out a number of cases in which our intuitions about our own minds are wrong. And the title comes from a study that Chris Chabris and I did about a dozen years ago, that built on some much earlier work by our colleague Dick Neisser, And it's this very simple video. We just have people watch three people wearing white shirts passing a basketball, and they have to count how many times they pass the ball. And at the same time, there are three people wearing black shirts passing their own ball, and you're supposed to ignore their passes. And about halfway through the video, we have a person in a full-body gorilla suit come into the scene, turn to face the camera, thump her chest, and then walk off the other side 9 seconds later. And for people who don't know about it in advance, about 50% don't see the gorilla at all and are shocked when it's revealed to them. And for me, it's both that we miss these sorts of things. When you're focused on something, even if you look right at it, even if you direct your eyes right at the gorilla, about 50% of the time people don't see it. And this is related to the case of pilots not noticing the jet on the runway when they've got a head-up display. Just because you're looking at something doesn't mean you become aware of it. But the interesting thing about this is not just that we miss it, but it's that we're so convinced that we would notice. And that's the intuition that's dangerous. We don't understand that our minds don't take in everything that's right in front of us, even if it would be interesting or unusual.
I was in a presentation where they did that, and literally half the people, when they said what they missed and they played it back, that half of the people in the room, there was an audible gasp, like they just could not believe that they missed it. But I will tell you, I did see it the first time.
Yeah, well, if we were able to do the test again, it'd be about a 50% chance you'd see it the next time.
Every scientific study should always have someone in a full-body gorilla costume walk in the middle of it just to see what people
think. I think that would be a great addition to most studies. I tell people that if you see somebody wandering around Champaign-Urbana in a gorilla suit, the odds are very good that it's me.
Nice. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time and for enlightening and explaining this stuff to us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
And good luck with your research.
Thank you.
Well, yep, I don't, we cannot do what we think we can do.
So I'm telling you, you got to meet your brain. Brain, I love you, and I meet you where you're at. That's my 2011 pledge.
That's almost a book title.
That's more of a pamphlet.
Brain,
I meet you where you're at.
Like an informational one?
Yeah.
That you pick up as you're leaving the community center, kind of like on the wall?
Yep.
Meet your brain where it is.
Brain, I meet you where you are.
I really think, it is, you know, we are encouraged actively to multitask. I mean, we are... You know, there's all these cool little gadgets you can get, and everywhere it's just like, you know, this is what you're supposed to do. And, you know, they put TVs in cars, and I mean, it's really like, yeah, it's something that we need to think about.
So I've been tempted. I mentioned the texting while driving. I seriously don't do that, but I've been tempted to do it. And after my initial conversation with Professor Simons, it does not even enter my mind. And it actually, like, talking where I live, you're allowed to talk on a cell phone while you're driving you know, you have the thing in your ear or whatever. And I appreciate the fact that I should just be focusing on my driving and nothing else so much more now.
Right. You know, this is kind of why I'm a little bit of a technophobe, I think, in some regards. Like, I still read old school books, and I have, you know, I don't really listen to it anymore, but I used to have vinyl records. Because when you listen to vinyl records, you kind of only can listen to vinyl records because you have to go walk up and flip the record over and all that stuff. And with books, you really can't. You know, it's not like an e-reader. Like, you have a book. There's nothing else you can do with a book except read it, you know?
You meet the media where it's at.
Exactly. Exactly. Right.
So there you go. My first story, multitasking, a myth.
A myth. Yeah, yeah. So my first story, or my only story, rather. I keep saying first story. I think you said first story, too.
I may have.
Yeah. So my only story this week is also kind of about multitasking, but it's like a deeper multitasking. It's about people who speak different languages. And according to this research from the University of Haifa in Israel, they found that people who already speak two languages, so bilingual people, find it easier to learn a third language. So they can more quickly gain aptitude for that third language.
You know where else I've heard something similar to that?
What's that?
Having kids. People say that
once you have two kids,
the difference between the second and the third isn't as great.
I feel like then you would switch from man-to-man to zone defense, and it would be...
Maybe your brain does the same thing.
Right, maybe. So for the study, two groups of sixth grade students in Israel were chosen to represent a sample of students studying English as a foreign language. So the first group, comprised of 40 students, spoke both Russian. They were Hebrew. They spoke fluent Hebrew, but their mother tongue was Russian. So they spoke two languages. The second group was 42 native Hebrew-speaking students who had no other language skills. They just spoke Hebrew. All these kids were learning English. Some were a third language, some was the second language. They found that the group that was already skilled already knew Russian and Hebrew, which are, I don't know either of those languages, but I'm imagining they're pretty far off on the scale. They're not like, I don't think they're like joined together, but And English seems like a whole different animal unto itself, too, from those three.
English is ridiculous.
It's hard. For people that don't know English...
If you try to explain the rules
Because there's no rules.
I'm trying to teach my kid
to
read.
It's like Thunderdome.
It's insane. Like, yeah. I can't give him any good reason why we spell... Like, why a K is silent.
Yeah, or like, or how about contracted, like, don't and won't.
We're not even there. I mean, just even the...
Forget about it. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Wait, what were you saying? What was your example?
Like a silent K in front of no.
Yeah, yeah.
Like explain. Try to explain somebody why no, K N O W is the same as N O, which is different than N O W.
Why do we have so many silent consonants in English? We have a lot of them.
There's a whole movement trying to make the English language phonetic.
Yeah,
and I didn't really pay that much attention until I actually have sort of revisited learning English.
Right.
I'm behind it.
Revisiting.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It is the hardest. There is no rhyme or reason to half of the at least that I'm aware of. Anyway, what were you saying?
Well, I'm saying that the what they found is that the students who knew Hebrew and Russian already had much more quicker command and learned much more quickly both writing and language skills and speaking skills of English than the kids that only knew Hebrew. And you know, they don't really go into why this is. They're still kind of figuring out why. They say that, you know, gaining command of a number of languages improves proficiency in native languages. Oh, that's another thing, is that kids that already had a command, the kids that were proficient in both languages were actually better in both languages than the kids that only knew one language. So I think it's like you're training your brain to know, once you know like two languages, maybe your brain can just like pick up the third language easier. Like, oh, yeah, you know, because I would think it would just get crammed in there and you'd get confused. Like, I know English pretty well, and I also know Spanish fairly fluently. And I tried, at one point in my life, I tried to learn Italian, and that was just, like, too much. Because Spanish and Italian are kind of similar, so they all kind of just started getting jammed together.
Right.
And I just made Italians mad by speaking Spanish, basically.
Right.
You know? But I would imagine, yeah, I mean...
For you, that should have been easy for you.
It should have been, but it wasn't. It was ridiculously complicated, even though they're actually, like, you were talking about English having, like, no rules, where Spanish and Italian both have very kind of simple conjugation rules.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. It was still complicated.
All right.
So...
Very good.
Awesome. Yeah. So it's kind of multitasking.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's my story. I mean, I think... Obviously, I think it's always good to learn more language. I think they say when you're younger, it's like the best time.
Yeah.
So.
Because then your brain hardens and it won't let new information in.
Yeah. Do you remember that story? There was always that story about, remember pro basketball player Dikembe Mutombo, how he knew like 12 different languages?
No, I don't really like basketball. More of a hockey guy.
That's right.
So before we get into the social liaison portion... The first story of the year was the lice story, being able to tell when humans started wearing clothes due to studying the lice DNA. Yeah. So I let the researcher, Dr. David Reed, know that he won.
Nice.
And he sent me an email back.
Oh, that's awesome.
That I want to read. So this is from the gentleman, the researcher who was working on that. He says, and this is in regards to the question we had about DNA. All DNA is the same size, but the genome of lice is tiny. Parasites have small genomes, and lice have the smallest genome of all insects examined to date. He says he thinks it's great that such a reviled creature has some quite useful qualities, too. We've carried lice around with us throughout our evolutionary history, so they have recorded our history in their DNA. This gives us an extra transcript of that history to explain... answer questions like, when did the first people get to the new world, which is what they are currently exploring.
We should call them lice, : mankind's historian.
We should call him that. He didn't get back to me right away because he was in Guantanamo naval base in Cuba, collecting bats for another research.
Oh, really?
Project, yeah.
Wow.
Pretty neat stuff.
That's cool.
So, anyway, all right. Social liaison work. Jorge Ribas.
So this is already, we're early into the year, but this is the year of thunder snow. I mean, it's everywhere. We had it here 2 weeks or last week, and I guess the Midwest, which just got pounded by this huge storm, there's been thunder snow everywhere.
My cousin lives in Chicago, and I talked to her yesterday.
Right.
I think she said they canceled school for the first time in 12 years.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, did you? There
Two
was
days
pictures.
In a row.
Did you see the pictures of Lakeshore Drive?
I mean,
it was crazy. Yeah, It looked like a, like almost like an apocalypse movie. But anyway, we got tons of listeners commenting on our Facebook page about Thundersnow. Julie writes in that for those of us who've never experienced firsthand Thundersnow on video, they show a video of a guy on the Weather Channel, like they say, flips out over Thundersnow.
I watched that.
I didn't watch the video.
It's hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tim writes in that he was waiting for Thundersnow here in mid-Missouri today, but was sadly disappointed at the absence. The show is still great. Good job. Steve writes in that there's nonstop talk of Thundersnow in Chicago. I might have to stay up past his 8:30 p.m. bedtime to check it out. Jonathan writes out that there was Thundersnow in Missouri. So basically, just there was Thundersnow. This is the year that maybe your song, maybe that song can blow up this year.
If you hear a certain song at the end of this podcast,
oh.
Maybe it's by a band named Thundersnow.
BJ writes in that we should change the intro music. We talked about the intro music to the three of us beatboxing, and none of us are really adequate beatboxers, I don't think. Although we could probably pull it off if we really...
Beatboxing is one of those things that you think you're better at it than you actually are. You don't want us to do that. You really don't.
That's great. That is exactly the way I would describe my beatboxing. So Joshua writes in that he went to Iraq for a year and a half and is now trying to catch up on the podcast. He's still in May, stuck back in time in May 2009, but he's glad that we've moved past the 1,000 followers mark. And Josh, thanks for listening again. Glad you made it back safe from Iraq, and we're glad to have you back on listening.
Is that it?
That's it.
All right. Well, sorry if the show isn't as funny as it normally is, but...
I think it was informative.
It was more informative.
Yeah, but it was kind of funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe not as funny.
I don't know.
Should we do some drive morning talk show, like
yeah,
horns
and stuff?
Yeah, we need
to put some funny sound effects in when Will's not here.
We should add a studio audience laugh track on times like these.
I know. Yeah.
Maybe kind of those sounds like, ooh.
I hate that Will is such an integral part of this show.
But is he, though? I guess he kind of is.
I don't know. Well, we'll find out next week when he's back. And, Will, if you're listening to this, I'm just kidding, dude.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Well, that's our show for the week. Thanks a bunch.
Should we mention where we can go?
Oh, yep.
So you can go to Facebook. You can join us at Discovery's Friday News Feedback Fans Unite, or follow us on Twitter at Feedback Nation, and the blog.
News.discovery.com/feedblog.
Cool.
All right. I guess that's it.
That's it.
Have a good week, everybody.
There's a pile of thunder snow in my heart, but I can see for miles. How should I interpret the data? Let's begin the trials of love. Research.
What does this mean?
All of the data.
What does this mean?
Could it be love?
What does this mean?
For us. It's 27 degrees below, but my head is in the clouds. The storm has broken open, and I hear thunder stew all around. But now there can't be thunder, I've been hearing from the start. The storm is gone, but you're still here.
It was that?
The beating of me heart. Begin the research.
What does this mean?
All of the data.
What does this mean?
Could this be love?
What does this mean?
For us. Good night, thank you. Good night, everyone.